Hey, John.
Hey, Nick.
I'm looking through my notes here, and do you happen to know what the different ages of comics are?
Well, they, you know, I think they're legal to drink at least 20, 21, depending on the European region. There's some areas where if a comic can reach the bar, they can order.
Okay, now I see it. At 25, they can rent a car.
Okay.
Got it.
And this is Strangersville.
Welcome to Stranger Still,
a podcast where we comic about comics and learn the history of them.
That was a weird sentence. I'm Nick Wood.
I'm John Began.
Man, I should have said something clever like, I'm your hero, Nick Wood.
Wow, how clever.
I thought okay, I was hoping that you'd go with it and then I'd edit it to sound like...
I'm your villain, John.
And what's that? A bird, a plane. It's Ryan Lynch.
Hello, I'm your friendly neighborhood sidekick, Ryan Lynch.
Today, if you haven't guessed, we're talking about the history of comics, and who better to join us than the person who's taught me basically everything I know about Spider-Man,
that's a lot of pressure.
From the podcast Divisive Issues.
Yes, I am here.
What is this podcast called Divisive Issues?
Oh, boy. So, we are a show with four hosts. That two of us love comics, and two of us think they're super dumb and kind of hate them.
To be fair, I think they're starting to come around based on the last few episodes.
I don't know. They're also digging their heels in real hard.
Yeah.
But so basically, Sly and I like really love comics. We know all the history. You know, we could spout endless trivia. And the other two, Phil and Daryl, only read them for the show. And generally, once we finish them, they, like a kid on the last day of school, throw out all their knowledge and completely purge it from their brain. And we talk about comic book history, controversial comics. We usually try to pick books that are like noteworthy or kind of like clickbaity that people might have kind of like not really like what you guys do, but like the idea, like, what's that? I'd like to know more about that. Yeah. And we go through them, you know, piece by piece. So if most people haven't read them, so, and they seem to enjoy it anyway, but if you have been paying attention to the flyer drive, Nick was just on an episode. We talked about the gritty post-apocalyptic Scooby-Doo reboot.
Not your daddy, so, Scooby-Doo.
It was hilarious.
Yeah.
It was so good.
That was such a good time.
Yeah, and Nick, you played the role of Fan there.
I filled in for Sly, perfectly. Yeah. I don't know if this was in the episode. I think it might have been about how Sly absolutely hates Scooby-Doo, which is really funny, because I replaced him. It's neither here nor there.
Well, if we had to replace everything Sly hated, I wouldn't be on the show anymore.
That's true.
Oof. Stay around for the drama. Flying machine down.
Yeah, at the end of the episode, we're going to have a lot of smack talking about the three other hosts of Divisive Issues.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a lot of fun, and you know, that's, we've been doing it for a while, so we have quite the backlog.
I will say too, like, it's for, I hear a lot that people are like, I want to read comics, but I have no idea where to start. This is like great for listeners or readers of comics and non-readers, because they'll just talk about something and you can be like, oh, that sounds interesting, and just go check it out, because usually they're like one shots, because you guys can't like cover the 50 years of Spider-Man. So you'll pick like one story that's noteworthy and talk about that.
And as we go through it, when there's like characters that have been around for 30 years but nobody's ever heard of, that's when Phil and Daryl are like, who the hell is this guy?
Like Blue Beetle and stuff.
Hey, don't you say anything bad about my beloved Blue Beetle. But yeah, exactly. Like, they'll be like, who is this guy? And then we'll like explain it a little bit. And a lot of times Sly gets annoyed because I will do the like absolute dumbest version of the thing. And they'll be like, that is so dumb. And I'm like, yeah, but isn't it good?
Like the worst example of their... Of what
he's a spider, but he's also part man.
He's also part man
in his heart.
You know, one time he did grow a bunch of legs, so he was kind of more man spider. Then one time he turned into a big spider and gave birth to himself. That happens.
One time he was an Italian Spider-Man.
Oh, that, now mustache. Nothing's better than that.
It's so good.
I just read we're going to talk about Spider-Man a lot because that's like my point of reference for comics. But in Spider-Geddon, there's Spider-Mam, which is Aunt May has the spider powers.
Very good.
It's very interesting. So anyway, enough about that. Let's talk about comics.
Okay.
We just moved horizontally, but okay.
What?
We talked. We went from comics to comics.
Oh yeah.
What a jump.
A lateral move. So John, I'm putting this at you because you're a noob to the comic scene.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I have like a specialized interest in Spider-Man, and Ryan's like the overall expert, it seems. So John, I'm going to ask you, when do you think the first comic was created?
The first comic. An Egyptian cave wall.
Well, okay.
I would argue cave paintings are sequential art. I think that qualifies.
Yes, they are. So a lot of people brought that up, and it's kind of a trick question anyway. Because it depends on what you're talking about. If you're talking about sequential art, it's definitely like cave drawings and hieroglyphics and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But what if I narrow it down to comic strips, John?
Ooh. Whoa.
It's not the sultry thing you think
so
it is.
So that would be Egyptian cave paintings without clothes.
Ooh.
I'm going to go with the like tens.
The tens? The 1910s?
Yeah.
Or the 1810s? Or the 1010s?
The 1910s.
So I don't think it should come as any shock that comic strips started out in newspapers. That's what we associate them with a lot.
More like old papers.
Yeah, get it? Because they're a dying medium.
Roasted.
Got them.
So for a long time, there were like humorous hand-drawn illustrations that would be featured in newspapers like all throughout the 1800s, basically ever since they had newspapers and they could put illustrations in them. I would say that these were more like political cartoons as we would consider them today. But the first comic strip as we know it today was The Yellow Kid by Richard Felton Outcult. And it was about a boy, and it brought in like political humor, stuff of the times going on.
What was the times?
It was 1896.
Oof. Whoa.
It first debuted on February 16th, 1896. And at the start of it, it was meant to just sort of fluff up the newspaper, but it was like hugely popular. So immediately other people started making new strips to be put in the newspaper. Some of these are still around today. And I have a list here, like Dick Tracy, that started in 1931, so 40 years later, but it's still going today. Gasoline Alley's still going today. That started in 1918. A lot of these started out around that time. Let's see. I didn't know Ripley's Believe It or Not was a comic. That started in 1918 as well, and it's still going today.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, I had no
idea. I don't believe it.
I don't believe it.
You got that option, though.
Yeah.
They did give you that choice.
It's not like I can't believe it's not butter, because you can believe it or not.
You can't. Yeah, you can believe it or not. You cannot believe it's not butter.
You cannot. So knowing that the first comic strip was in 1896, when do you think the first comic book was created? This is for either of you.
Now, when you mean like a standalone, like you could go by and it's just comic strips?
Yes.
1920.
Yeah, that sounds... Okay, is it before or later than that? Because that sounds about where I would land.
It's before that. About a year after The Yellow Kid came out, they started...
Oh, the
90s. yeah, 1890. In 1897, they reprinted a bunch of the Yellow Kid strips in different collections. So those were technically comic books. But these days, the credit actually goes way back to a book called The Adventures of Obadiah Oldbuck. This was created by Rodolphe Topher in 1837.
Whoa.
And what's
that's
that?
That's the most 1837 name I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Obadiah. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, but it was at the time.
It was about collecting buckwheat in the fields. Like,
yeah. Old Obadiah. At the time, it was considered like a picture book. But if you look at the thing, it has like the three panel structure that looks like a Sunday morning comic strip in a newspaper. Rodolphe Topher was considered by many the grandfather of comics because many artists took inspiration from the adventures of Obadiah Oldbuck when the first comic strips were coming out. And pretty much any quote unquote comic books after 1897 were just reprints of the syndicated comic strips. But if you want to talk about modern comic books as we know them today, we do have to jump to 1927.
Where I finally feel validated.
You're right in your wheelhouse. So the first like quote unquote...
They're real page flappers. Thank you.
It was very good. So there was this book published called The Funnies. It was published by the Dell Publishing Company. And what set this apart from the reprints was that it had full color, unlike most, like any newspaper at the time. It had 24, as I counted them, different stories in them. Some were like a half page, some were like 2 pages long. And if you look at the pictures of these, the panel structure is more like a comic book that you'd see today rather than a comic strip in a newspaper. But it actually didn't have a cover. And I don't know why it's important to make this distinction. but the distinction was made in my research, but it wasn't until 1933 with the famous Funnies, A Carnival of Comics, that we got the first comic book with a proper cover.
I actually have a couple insights into why those like weird little nerd distinctions matter.
Please tell me, enlighten me, please.
So we're about to enter the golden age of comic books here. Uh-huh. And one of the things that if people go and read a lot of these old books, there's a lot of weird little things that you're like, I don't understand why this is here. Some of them mm-hmm. are like covers and things like that. But one of the things like, and it, a lot of it has to do with how they would have to pay for shipping on what they were classified as. So for example, when you buy a comic book, like a flappy comic book, you know, like the floppy
comic book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're you don't have to pay tax on them because they're considered periodicals. And back in like the 30s, if you read any like really old comics, they'll have a text story in the middle that'll be like really boring and super pointless. And it'll just be like two pages of like dry text. And usually it'll be like about Superman or whatever, or like an old Western story. But the reason why that is because you needed two pages of text to be considered a magazine, in which case you would pay less to ship it.
Classic tax evasion.
Yeah. So it was like, so you would get shipping discounts for shipping magazines versus comic books. So they would be, and same thing like with tax things. So they would like follow these very specific rules. So I assume that the coverless thing probably has to do with either copyright or is it a periodical kind of thing, like that kind of thing. Because same thing, like you'll see, if you ever see something called an ash can cover, what they are, you'll see like old black and white covers, and they're super valuable because if a company wanted to get a copyright of something, they would have to quickly print one and send one to print, and they would print just like a handful of copies, and they'd be black and white, and usually like the same as what we'll see later, but they just wanted to nail the copyright. So like can get like the first Captain Marvel, you know, like the Shazam book was originally called Flash Comics, but DC got their Ashcan cover out like 2 weeks before and created the Flash as a way to be like, hey, screw you guys, we're taking this name. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So like things like that. So if it didn't have a cover, it probably wasn't considered like a regular printing periodical. Like, you know, like when you look at Time, like Time magazine, it'll be like volume 10, issue 40, you know, right on the cover. Without the cover, it's probably just a collection and not like a sequential publication.
Yeah.
I'm speculating, but
Do you ever think that they like printed them off and then mailed them themselves in a sealed envelope and never opened it to get the copyright?
That's the only way to do it.
That's where that came from, right? From
that's what we do with every episode of Stranger Still.
But I mean, that, it is basically the same thing, because they wouldn't print them to sell. They would print just to be like, look, I printed this. It's stamped with a date. It's we own Wiz Comics and things like that.
Yeah, that's ridiculous, man.
Yeah.
So after the famous Funnies, A Carnival of Comics, came out, a lot of other comic books started coming out. And something important happened in 1935 when National Allied Publications put out the new Fun Comics number 1, and there were 6 issues of this, and then it was rebranded as More Fun Comics, which eventually led to the creation of such characters as the Green Arrow, Aquaman, and Superboy.
Yes.
And eventually,
he wasn't grown up yet, yeah.
No, Superman was a different character, but...
Right. Yeah, because he was older then, is what you mean.
Yeah, a lot of the publishers changed names. Names a lot, so National Allied Publications eventually became DC, from my understanding.
Yes.
So from here on out, I'm just going to call them DC and Marvel and whatever other names I need.
Because you're a corporate sellout, I guess.
Well, one of the things that we'll see in the vein of corporate sellouts is there used to be lots and lots and lots of comic book companies, and over time, DC especially kind of kept buying them one by one by one. So like DC characters you would think of as, you know, oh, these are DC staples like Green Lantern or, you know, Captain Marvel, Shazam. They were other, and our beloved Blue Beetle, those were other characters, companies that DC just slowly acquired over time.
Mine's about to break our heart and tell us that Obadiah Batman sold out and sold his character Batman to DC.
So, actually, you know, when we talk about companies like All American Comics, National, Fawcett, like a lot of these are going to be, Charleston are going to be acquired by DC over several decades.
Yeah, and a lot of them, I didn't even write down most of them, but by like the 80s, most of them were just gone for many reasons that we'll also get into.
Yeah. It's not just corporate greed. It's also conservative values.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Capitalism.
What a combo. Yes.
Yeah. So before we even get there, do you want to guess who the first superhero in comics was? Here's a hint. It's also a trick question. Because, again, it depends on what you're talking about. So if you're talking about comic strips, in 1936, Lee Falk created the first superhero to appear in a comic strip, The Phantom, who had, like, a really bad 80s or 90s movie made about him, I believe.
What could he do?
He could, like, go through walls.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
I mean, okay.
That's all I know about him.
And then Superman?
Well, yeah, and then it was Superman. In 1938, the first superhero in a comic book was created with Action Comics number 1 starring Superman. It was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Yeah.
Oh, so you're not a fan of Mandrake the Magician, one of the first comic strip superheroes from 1934?
Mm, no. Nope. He's a magician.
Yeah.
He has a career.
Is magic not a superpower now?
It's not. Have you watched Penn & Teller?
Have you listened to our show?
A year later, Bob Kane and Bill Finger created, you brought this up, so I thought I'd bring it full circle. Mm-hmm. They created Batman and Detective Comics 27.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what DC stands for? We're about to blow either Phil or Daryl's minds. I can't remember.
Dumb Comics.
Do you know what it stands for? Detective Comics.
Yeah. Okay. So when people say DC Comics, it's like saying the ATM machine or a CD disc.
Detective Comics.
I was just playing the whole Marvel DC thing.
So, yeah, Superman, you know, the real, we consider, like, the Platinum Age pre-Superman, which is, like, you know, the really, like, early stuff. But really, like, my knowledge of comics really mostly starts with Action Comics number 1, Superman's first appearance. You know, if you've probably seen the cover lampooned, if not, you haven't seen it, it's him holding up a car and, like, a wheel is rolling away and there's a guy that's like, what's going on?
It's iconic. I think most people should know it. And after Superman got into this, I don't know that we've defined this yet, but there are different ages of comics. And some of them are amorphous. I'm sure that Ryan will point out
there's great debate. If you could imagine nerds debating semantics.
What? Probably on the internet too. But I'll go off of what I have, and Ryan can fill in all the gaps and stuff. But the first age after the Platinum Age was the Golden Age of comics, which lasted somewhere between 1938 and 1956. But going back to
55, Nicholas. 50.
By 12 months. So going back to Action Comics number 1, do you want to guess how much the most recent article I could find was 2014. Do you want to guess how much it sold for on eBay, John?
Millions.
$3.2 million.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Do you know why that is?
Because of nerds.
Well, part of it's because it's his first appearance, and that's very important to nerds. Mm-hmm. Part of it is also because there are less than 100 copies of the originally printed 200,000. And there's only 6 copies that are listed as in fair, quote-unquote, condition.
And fair is the lowest quality that is still considered, like, a marker.
Purchasable.
Yeah
anything... like wrapping paper. It was from your 1950 grandma's birthday present.
And one thing, actually, that I find really interesting about this is comics were not really considered collectible until way later. Like, one of my friends, one of the co-founders, who is no longer on the show, of Divisive Issues, Joe, interviewed Denny O'Neill, who's someone we will certainly be talking about if we're going to talk about the history of comics. But he said that, like, when he was growing up during this age, people didn't keep comics at all. They would read them and then throw them away. He repeatedly called them a birdcage liner. You wouldn't keep them at all because there'll be another Superman coming in a month, so who cares? Yeah.
And they're 10 cents.
Yeah,
well, I guess
exactly.
That was a lot back then, but yeah. This golden age, though, brought us a lot of the superheroes that we know and love today. Mm-hmm. Most of them seem to be from, like, DC. You got Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash. We got Captain America from Marvel. And I guess it just so happens that that's exactly what the world needed to get through World War II. Because we started having all of these heroes fighting Nazis and
punching Hitler in the nose.
Nazi.
Right in
adjacent,
the left nostril.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Punching Hitler.
And when you look at, like, Superman in particular, he is created by two soft-spoken Jewish poor people that lived in, like, the Jewish ghettos of Manhattan that couldn't get published anywhere and couldn't get work. And it's this mild-mannered guy, but deep inside is this the strongest man who has every superpower you can imagine.
Yeah, and it's totally relatable.
Yeah, and, like, he, you know, nobody cares about Clark Kent. Lois Lane won't talk to him and, like, all these things. And then, you know, and, like, having this, like, before we even really, before America was involved in World War II, having these two, like, poor Jewish kids create this whole phenomenon is really wild. And, you know, we, when you get into, like, all the iconography around that, and, you know, people that are like, oh, why are comics so political? In the first issue of Action Comics, Superman fights a corrupt politician who's abusing people in the ghetto, and domestic abusers. He throws them off a balcony.
Hey, and that's still relevant 80 years later.
Yeah. And punching Nazis still relevant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, somehow, right? Yeah.
And it's even, like, bizarre. Captain America number one, you know, you have Cap punching, you know, this over at Marvel, Jack Kirby and Joe Simon, you have him punching Hitler in the face, and they actually had a bunch of Nazis. I always want to say neo-Nazis, but they're not neo yet, they're just Nazis.
Right. It's bizarre. They're the vintage ones. We live in a world where we have to make that distinction.
Yeah, and they had a bunch of Nazis go to Marvel or Timely at the Times headquarters and say, like, we're going to beat Jack Kirby up, because he keeps telling us about these Nazis, you know, he keeps saying Nazis are bad. And Jack Kirby went down, he said, bring it on, I'll kick the hell out of all of you. And they went home scared. So, you know, punch a fascist. That's all I'm saying.
Go Jack. So one thing that I want to loop back to, part of the reason why there's only six good copies of Action Comics number one is because right around the 40s, when this was all going on, people would, if they didn't use them as birdcage liners, they would usually send a lot of their reading materials to the troops. Mm-hmm. So apparently 30% of what the troops received in terms of reading material were comics.
Yeah.
And there was also a shortage. This is something Ryan taught me, and then I found it in my research as well. There was a shortage of paper at the time that they needed for explosives or boxes or ammunition or shipping and all this stuff. So they had paper drives that they would do to collect, like, newspapers and magazines and comics. And people would just be like, all right, take my Action Comics number one, use that to build a flare out of.
Yeah, so it's possible that, you know, Captain America really did kill some Nazis.
That's true. That's incredibly true. But that's why a lot of these are super valued.
And, like, I'm a big collector of, I have Silver Age on, and, like, even, like, I have boxes and boxes and boxes. I don't have a single Golden Age comic. Yeah. Like, they are, like, even, like, because I'm a big Flash collector, and even when I'm, like, I just search Golden Age Flash.
Yeah.
It's, like, very slim pickings, and they're thousands and thousands of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even for, like, nothing. Like, we always talk about, like, these are key issues, first appearances, just anything is just hard to find.
Yeah, this is going to dip into a little bit of a different medium, but I feel that way with, like, Scooby-Doo sales, because I've looked at them on eBay, and if you want, like, the cheapest ones are listed at, like, $50 to $75, and it's, like, a piece of Scrappy's head. And then if you, like, get up to, like, $100, $125, it's, like, Scooby-Doo's head or Shaggy's head. And if you want, like, a full-bodied one-character cell, they're, like, $500.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Which is why you should donate.
Capitalism chops up the people we love and mails and sends them different pieces.
That's very true.
To the flying machine drive.
Give us money. So towards the tail end of the golden age, there's a lot of people started coming home from the war, and superheroes started to fall out of fashion because people came home and they're sick of the fighting. They just did all the fighting and they're sick of it. So Captain America, like, basically dropped off the face of the earth. They tried bringing him back.
Basically everybody except Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman.
Yeah, exactly. So we started to get, I guess, more experimental comics. We started to get, like, horrors and westerns and romance comics, like anything but superheroes.
And there was always, like, when you bought, a lot of people don't know that when you read, like, Golden Age books, they would be like 80 pages, and you would get, like, in Marvel Comics, if you got Marvel Comics, there'd be Namor the Submariner story, a Human Torch story, like superhero stuff, but there'd also be a western. There would be, like, a Tarzan type story. It's Kazar. It's not Tarzan, but it's Tarzan. You know, like, you would get, like, all these. It would be, you would basically be getting, like, a full magazine with lots of variety. And then, like you said, it started to transition more into the weirder stuff. Like, EC was doing a lot of horror. You had, like, Simon and Kirby, you know, instead of doing, you know, more superhero stuff, they would do, you know, romance, like young teen romance books and stuff like that.
Like, a person that I work with said that he found a bunch of romance comics. I was like, he's like, do you think they're worth anything? I was like, I don't think anyone wants to read that.
I mean, they could be.
I don't know.
As we re-diversify the medium in the last, like, 10 years, you're seeing a lot more drive for, like, different types of audiences that have been kind of excluded from comics for a long time.
Yeah. I think that there's, at least in the last few years, there's been a big drive to make it more accessible, especially mm-hmm. with the 7 relaunches that DC's done in the last year.
Well, that's a whole other thing.
We'll get there. Yeah. We're still in the golden age.
Yes.
Things started getting more dark and serious towards and the end. What's that?
And they started also not just getting like scarier, but they also started getting a lot more like social commentary. So mm-hmm. you'd have like, there were always like I mentioned, like, you know, Superman fought like corrupt criminals and stuff, but you all of a sudden started getting more like, let's tell stories about like race in America and like things that were a lot more pushing the envelope.
Yeah. And that led to a bunch of old people thinking that it was corrupting the kids, which is what they always do when there's a new type of media that they don't understand.
Yep. Could be television, could be video games.
Yeah. Still happens today. Yeah.
Like the article that was written last week about podcasting.
Oh, was it?
Oh my God.
So in 1954, the Comics Code Authority was introduced, mm-hmm. and this was like a semi-voluntary code of ethics, I guess, that a lot of publishers adopted. And if they followed these guidelines, they could put the CCA seal of approval on the front of their comics. And I could go through the whole list, but it would add like another 20 minutes to our mm-hmm. show. Basically, it was like no violence. No sex, no sexual violence.
Extra Jesus,
no drugs.
Did this birth, like, Christian comics at that time?
It kind of birthed the Silver Age of comics.
Yeah. So it's just to clarify a little bit, there is still, mm-hmm. like, violence, but you can't, like, you can't show blood, you can't have any violence against authority figures, you can't ever
have... Sounds like YouTube.
Yeah. You can't have a police officer be in the wrong, you can't have politicians be in the wrong. Mm-hmm. And this started because... Are you going to talk about Seduction of the Innocent?
Maybe a little bit. The last thing that I was going to say about the CCA is that good always had to triumph over evil deeds. The bad person always had to get their comeuppance in the end. Mm-hmm. And that was like the most important thing. But what did you have about seducting me?
So basically this psychologist wrote, I don't even remember his name. The guy sucks, whatever.
I don't want to write his name down. Yeah,
he wrote a book called Seduction of the Innocent where he was just like, it's the same thing we saw growing up in the 90s that, like, violent video games cause, you know, all sorts of things. Or people saw in the 80s that heavy metal causes, you know, violence and suicides and things like that. That
one of my – just to – I want to cut in here real fast.
Oh, sure.
One of my high school teachers pointed this out because I did a video essay on violence in video games. And he's like, this is – like, back in the day, people thought that paperback books – we're corrupting our youth. This is something that just happens in every generation. Doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
It's just something that old people don't understand.
Yeah.
And this touches on, we had the episode with Cody where he talked about how his dad fought the heavy metal music battle. And Twisted Sister.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Keep going, Ryan. Sorry.
So just like Dee Snider and Jello Biafra and Frank Zappa did in the 80s for music, you know, these comic creators had to go in front of Congress and tell them that they weren't communists and they weren't, you know, this was like a real McCarthy thing.
Oh, yeah. Still during the Red Scare.
Yeah. And that they weren't like corrupting the youth. This is when Batgirl nobody's ever heard of, Betty Kane, don't worry about it. But like, that's when Batgirl and Batwoman are first introduced because they're like, see, Batman and Robin aren't gay like they say they are in Seduction of the Innocent and like all these things. And that's when we have these codes where, like, there's, if you look at, like, so when people think old comics, they think like the cheesy Great Scott, Adam West, Batman, but that's not really what the Golden Age is like. The Golden Age is really gritty and dark, and like people don't know that because the traditional society, like the evangelical right and all that kind of stuff, went out of their way to make sure kids didn't know about that.
Yeah.
Did you ever think that because the internet exists now, that maybe someone like did draw Batman and Robin as gay? Do you think that's something that might exist?
So maybe these committees is the first Rule 34.
Maybe. So anyway, the Comics Code of Authority kind of ushered in the Silver Age.
Yeah.
That was in 54, but I have the Silver Age lasting from 56 to 70.
Okay, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
I have 55 to 69, but whatever.
Another 12 months, Nick.
I know. Well, I'm going to say 54 then, Ryan. But since like good had to triumph over evil and all that stuff, superheroes really started to make a comeback. We got a bunch of reboots of old heroes, like I think Green Lantern was rebooted around this time.
Yeah, so the main thing that starts the Silver Age is the first appearance of Barry Allen, the Flash.
Yeah.
Because if you've ever seen the old Flash, he's the one with the metal helmet that you know with the little wings. And like there was an old Green Lantern with like a cape and had fire powers, and like all these heroes that most people know of today look looked totally different in the 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. And what happened was Julie Schwartz and Carmen Infantino were these creators at DC, and they were like, let's do a total different thing that's more in line with the time. So instead of it being more like supernatural and more like esoteric in the Golden Age, they made it a hard sci-fi. So yeah. Barry Allen's a scientist. Green Lantern is a test pilot that gets his powers from aliens instead of from a magic lantern from ancient China. Like, and it became like a hard it became like a hard sci-fi tilt that kids really loved, because this is now the you know, it's the post-atomic age. Mm-hmm. You know, now you know this is after World War II. You have like this suburban push for like, you know, be the next great scientist. You know, we're going to send someone to the moon. Mm-hmm. And comics became super, super popular. And meanwhile, Marvel was just about done. They were like about to disappear forever. And mm-hmm. they told Stan Lee, you know, the Justice League just came out. They said, make a team book. We're about to go bankrupt. Do whatever the hell you want. We don't care. And he said, you know what? I'm going to tell a story that I always wanted to read. And he wrote Fantastic Four number one, which is the first time superheroes really had like interpersonal problems. So they were still all good. But like Ben Grimm was this monster who hated himself. And that was something that hadn't really been seen before. Even in the Golden Age, you had like Dr. Midnight was blind, but he had special goggles that made it so he was not blind. And they never had to mention again. Like there wasn't interpersonal strife. And so DC is much campier and sci-fi heavy, mm-hmm. and Marvel becomes much more personal. And Fantastic Four number one is like the start of like modern Marvel and the start of their Silver Age.
And just because I have to talk about Spider-Man again, mm-hmm. you get Spider-Man who has a lot of personal issues with just trying to be a normal ass teenager, trying to make a few bucks, and ends up being a superhero because of it.
Yeah, and even that, he's the first teenage superhero that's not a sidekick.
Yeah, go Peter Parker.
And don't at me. I know the Star-Spangled Kid had an adult sidekick, but that's different, okay? Who cares about the
Star-Spangled
Kid?
Hey, man, 2% of our audience.
Someone was like poised at their
computer. No more email.
Okay. Don't at me, guys. But yeah, so like they, you know, you now had Marvel and DC, where DC was more like the traditional, more suit and tie. Like they even say, like a lot of the creators say, like at the time you wore a suit and tie to go to work at DC, and at Marvel it was a bunch of hippies, and like college kids would love Doctor Strange because it's just, you know, trippy and stuff like that. And like this is where you start to get the divide, because now all the other comic companies kind of fell apart or got bought up, and now you have like Marvel is humans trying to be gods, DC is gods trying to be human. And like that's when the divide starts. And the Silver Age is really when you start to see
He dresses like a bat and he beats up poor people. What's not the love?
Yeah.
That's not what I meant.
And this is when you start to see the real, like, the Silver Age is, people laugh because it's campy and the dialogue's dated and stuff, but you start to see the diversity start to come back by the mid-60s that was gone for so long.
Still a lot of important things, because it was campy. You get, like, a guy cutting Superman's haircut. I saw that image in one of the videos I watched. But there weren't, like, any super mature themes anymore. But the good news is that the CCA was more than, a guideline, like that scene from Pirates of the Caribbean. Where, like, they're actually just guidelines.
Well, it's one of those things, like, you can make a movie that's not rated by the MPAA, but are any theaters going to show it? No.
Exactly.
You know, it's the same kind of thing. You could make a Comics Code, you know, unauthorized book, but no one's going to sell it.
Yeah, like it was only like head shops that were selling them.
Yeah, exactly.
There's still an underground scene, which is good. But then the other good news is that over like the course of a decade and a half, the rules started to loosen. Mm-hmm. And finally, in 1971, they updated like the rules in the CCA. And now you could have things like a suggestion of seduction, but not actual seduction. They can now have vampires, werewolves, and other what do you want to call supernatural creatures, as long as they were treated like they were in old stories, like Dracula.
One nipple per three pages. Dracula nipple per 10 pages.
And the big thing that pushed us into, now we're about to enter what we call the Bronze Age, in the late 60s, early 70s, there's two big things that push that envelope. And the it's really like part one and three are at DC side, and part two is at Marvel side, where first Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams, who are, you know, I mentioned Denny O'Neill before, they're like these big 70s creators. They're the ones that brought back like the darker Batman, and like you know, they're the, if you watch a lot of superhero movies, I guarantee you know a bunch of Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams stories. Even if you don't know, you know them. But they revamped Green Lantern and Green Arrow and made them much more political, where like this is the first time you see, you know, in their first issue, I think it's Green Lantern 70, you have a black person confronting Green Lantern and saying, you know, you fight and save the planet, but what have you ever done for black people? Mm-hmm. And like, you have Green Arrow as this like loudmouth liberal that's like attacking landlords because he's evicting people so he could raise rent, and like trying to like gentrify a city, and like that started to push it a little. And then over at Marvel, Stan Lee published the first issue, I think it's Amazing Spider-Man 97, that's not the comics code, where it's Harry Osborn is addicted to drugs.
Yeah, I was going to start to get into that. Well, so I watched this one video, and the start of the Bronze Age was kind of all over the place. Some people said that it was it might have ended in 1973, or the Bronze Age would have started in 1973 when Gwen Stacy died in Spider-Man. Mm. There's also an argument that it occurred when comics went from 12 cents an issue to 15 cents an issue. But I think it was just like people got sick of the, like, they were fine with the campy superheroes for a long time, but eventually they're just like, okay, we've seen this enough, and started pushing the boundaries more.
Yeah. And then, like, so after the Spider-Man drug issue, they the mayor of New York City wrote a letter to DC and said, hey, you guys, oh, and the drug issue was published without the comics code stamp.
Yeah.
And it was still like wildly popular. And then the mayor of New York wrote a letter to DC and said, you guys need to talk about drugs too. This is an epidemic. And that's when Green Lantern Green Arrow 84 comes out, Snowbirds Don't Fly, and you have Green Arrow's sidekick Speedy addicted to heroin, and he goes on this whole rant about how like the previous generation told us segregation was right and Vietnam was justified, and you also told us drugs were wrong. Why would we listen to you this time? You know, you were wrong about everything else. Why would you be right about this one thing? And you know you talk a lot about liberal ideals, but where are you when people need you? You know, you could spout everything, but you don't actually do any action. And like, if that's not a direct throwing the mud at the older generation, I don't know what is.
And then, like, God too, right?
Like, lit their bong.
And that year is when the comics code was like, fine, you could do this.
I had a couple other notes, like Iron Man famously battled alcoholism, and one of the more important things, I think it's still relevant today, which it shouldn't be, is that X-Men became an allegory for racism, and that became hugely popular and important for that reason. The reason I say that shouldn't be an issue today is because we should have this crap figured out.
Yeah,
but
the X-Men was an allegory in the 60s, but it was still a bunch of white people on the team.
Right, yeah.
And in 1975, when they relaunched the team, they bring in Storm and Nightcrawler and Colossus, and like, not that Nightcrawler and, I mean, Nightcrawler's blue, but he's German. But like, you now, and you have a Native American character, and you have, you know, you have an actual diverse team that I guarantee if that issue came out now, it would be hailed as, you know, pandering and SJW propaganda.
Yeah.
Happens, I would say, like how timely is it that we're covering this now when Phase 4 is released with Marvel? And
yeah.
Yeah. We've got that just like making big headlines that there's only like one new white dude, and he's rumored to be possibly the gay guy that's going to be in the next round of movies.
Yeah. And like Giant Size X-Men number one, you know, written by Len Wein and drawn by Dave Cockrum, you have, you know, all these people, this is all their first appearance. They're on the team, and the rest of the team is trapped and has to be saved by them. And it's hailed as, like, with nerds, one of, like, the greatest issues ever written. But they just don't realize that, like, that's the thing you hate now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Ryan and I were talking about how Miles Morales never really got a fair shake because people pointed to, they just accused it of being pandering to a more diverse cast. And he
never then Spider-Verse wins an Oscar.
Right, yeah. It's like one of my favorite animated movies of all time, and I love the comics, and Spider-Gwen's probably my favorite comic right now, but that's neither here nor there. But it's a woman, which they also don't enjoy. But
in that regard, the Bronze Age is also when you have a lot of, you know, this is when you start to see more black superheroes take on their own, you know, their own books. They're not just, the Falcon is not just Captain America's sidekick anymore. Now you're getting, you know, Blade shows up. You're getting Luke Cage. Yeah, these kind of characters. You get Miss Marvel now is like an openly feminist book. Yeah. You know, you have Spider-Woman, you have all these different characters that are now like starting to diversify a lot more than just being supporting characters if they're in books at all.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's also bringing in Dracula and the werewolf. Like Marvel actually published Tomb of Dracula and Werewolf by Night for decades.
Yeah. I think the most important thing that I enjoy from the Bronze Age is that continuity became more important.
Yes.
Because before, all the stories were just stupid and all over the place. And now they're like, what if we told a story?
Because originally, in the business model in the Silver Age was, we are targeting kids between ages like 6 and 12. So yeah. Every 6 years, we could start reusing ideas because they've never read them before.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And this is when you see the rise of the direct market and comic shops, because now all of a sudden, whoa, these characters, like, this drug issue is a collectible. I want to read this. And you couldn't, like, go to a bookstore and buy, like, trade paperbacks like you can now. So right. That's when you start to see, like, the collectability and, like, these are key issues that matter instead of Birdcage Feeder.
Right. So let's get into that a little bit more, because I don't have a whole lot on the Bronze Age and after that, because the closer we get, the more it is in the collective consciousness.
Mm-hmm. So now we're getting into, like, counterculture stuff, right, in the 70s?
Yeah. A lot of that. Like, we get a lot of, like, anti-heroes and stuff out of the 80s and
early 90s. The Punisher shows up in the mid-70s, you know, characters like that.
We also got, like, Image and Dark Horse in the 80s and early
90s. Yeah, that's more early 90s. But actually, one of the things that will lead to that, in the Bronze Age, we see a lot of creators now pushing for creators' rights.
Yeah.
Because, like, we still see GoFundMes, like, you know, Bill Mantlo, who created Rocket Raccoon in, you know, one of the biggest movies, you know, of the time, was he couldn't pay his medical bills as he was, you know, like, dying in the hospital. Yeah. Like, and and that's now, but you start to see, especially people like Neil Adams, really pushed for, like, creators' rights and unionizing, because you used to always be work for hire. Mm-hmm. So once you work, they own everything you create. And this is why I know you guys joked about, like, Superboy and Superman being different characters. It actually matters, because Siegel and Schuster own Superman. They do not own Superboy. Even though it's Clark Kent as a teenager, it is a separate IP.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, this is when you start to see creators really push. And this is one of the reasons why we actually, for a long time, didn't see a lot of 70s books reprinted. DC and Marvel were only printing, like, 60s and 90s stuff, because a lot of the 70s stuff, the royalties were more expensive to pay.
And there's a lot of legal issues around a lot of that, too, especially, like, Captain Marvel and all that stuff, which you want to hear more
about. That's
then
a whole thing.
Divisive issues.
Yeah. And you also, you see a lot of this stuff, like, start to really culminate, that eventually down the line is when a lot of these people will quit DC and Marvel and found Image as, like, creators own things. So, like, Robert Kirkman owns The Walking Dead, even though it's published at a comic book company, he still owns the characters. Whereas, you know, Bill Finger wasn't given credit for co-creating Batman, even though he made him a dark color scheme. He created Commissioner Gordon, Gotham City, you know, the origin with
all
his parents.
Stuff.
Yeah, all that stuff. But he wasn't given credit until, like, 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah.
That had to feel awesome, though.
Yeah, he was dead.
Finally.
I mean, yeah, he wasn't around anymore. But, you know, the first time I bought a book that said Batman created by Bob Kane and Bill Finger, because Bob Kane is a historical, like, real piece of garbage. Yeah. So, you know, seeing that, like, in print, it, like, it was a lot more emotional than I expected it to be. But, like, that's the thing.
Nerd.
Yeah, but, like, in the Golden Age, the artist would write their name on the pages. The writer didn't, because he wasn't the last one to get it. So, like you mentioned earlier, who knows who wrote half of this stuff?
Yeah.
It's Da Vinci.
It's all Da Vinci. So where do we go from the Bronze Age? Fill me in.
So the Bronze Age ends, and it's all Mattel's fault.
We've also talked about this. Yeah.
So basically, it was either Mattel or Hasbro. I don't remember. But they wanted new toys. They wanted a whole new toy line. And they had Marvel's, like contract, I guess. So they were like, you guys need to come up with an excuse why all these characters are in the same story. So this comes the first comic book event, Secret Wars, in 1984. And this is also when Spider-Man gets the black symbiote costume, because they wanted to sell two Spider-Man action figures.
So hang on. I know a little bit about this because I was reading a lot of Spider-Man comics, and I got to the issue where the black suit shows up, and I was like, well, wait a second. I got to figure out where the black suit actually came from. So I was like, I'm going to read the first Secret Wars. Biggest mistake of my life.
Oh, no.
I mean, there are worse events. It's not good.
It was a waste of my time.
The premise is some super powerful guy collects all his favorite superheroes and makes them fight in space.
It
is paper thin. There is no anything.
What's his name? Thanos?
No, it was
the Beyonder.
The Beyonder. He comes back in Secret Wars 2 because I guess Secret Wars 1 wasn't enough garbage.
Well, Secret Wars 1 sold really well because it had never been done before. So normally there would be crossovers where, like, Marvel really, like, pushed the crossover where, like, Iron Man would show up in X-Men, and then all of a sudden it started becoming, like, Part 1 would be an Iron Man, Part 2 would be an X-Men, so you'd have to buy both books. And with Secret Wars, it was the first time there was an event where you would buy Secret Wars issues, I think 1 through 12 or 1 through 8, how many ever there are. So it wouldn't be Fantastic Four. You would buy this own separate book that had, like, an expiration date. It only had, you know, 12 issues. And it was really popular, so comics have not stopped doing it, and everybody kind of hates them.
Yeah, it's getting worse now to the point where the modern Secret Wars that you've told me to read is a collection of 129 issues.
Oh, you only need the main series. Everything else is
I'm
just fluff.
I'm not reading all 129 of those. But that's, I mean, that's the point that we're at now. Like, even Spider-Geddon had like 26 parts to it, I believe.
Yeah, because suckers like us are like, well, my favorite characters show up. I need to know what happens. Because like you said, you read all of a sudden he has a black suit. Yeah. And they got you because you went out and read it, right?
Yeah. Yep, I did.
Yeah, and over at DC, they were building a very complicated multiverse where those Golden Age guys were, they were Earth 2 and these guys were Earth 1. So they had a big event in 1986 called Crisis on Infinite Earths where they got rid of all the multiverse and they were just the heroes in the 40s and then they were heroes in the 60s and it like cleaned it up a little bit. But that enters into the Copper Age, which is like the late 80s, early 90s, where now comics start to get very mature. You have what we call the British Invasion, people like Alan Moore coming over and writing Watchmen and V for Vendetta. You have Grant Morrison getting super postmodern and crazy. You have, you know, Neil Gaiman starting Sandman. Oh, yeah. You know, all these things. Now, this is the stuff that most people probably start to recognize. Mm-hmm. You know, you also have people like Peter Milligan and Frank Miller writing just like very mature stories that, you know, are always like, people like, where do I start with Batman? Everybody always says Frank Miller. You know, Batman Year One, Dark Knight Returns are like the top of every, you know, best Batman stories list.
It's the same thing with like Daredevil. The Frank Miller did a run of that.
Yeah.
Every time you look up like where to start with Daredevil, it's the Man Without Fear.
Yeah. And this is when you start to get much darker takes. Like, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are kind of familiar with Watchmen or V for Vendetta. You know, this is when you start
in
to
today's
get, like,
world, I would hope so.
I saw an ad for the TV show today. And
yeah,
like,
I have no idea what that's about.
It seems pretty like Antifa, so like I'm about it, but we'll see.
Well, I just didn't know if it was like a the same storyline, but a TV show.
It seems like to be like way later, but I could get into Watchmen, the whole thing, the politics of Alan Moore, but that's a divisive issues topic.
Yeah, I think. I was gonna say, you guys covered that already.
Yeah, but it's like, this is when you start to see like sexual violence and like much darker, you know, severe political satire and like stuff that can, you know, completely change the medium, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse. It diversified it, but it also brought in this level of cynicism that you didn't see before, where like, what if evil wins every time? You know, and some people, like the non-fans on Divisive Issues, eat that up. So I'm kind of sick of it.
So you're saying it's just a bunch of edgelords?
Yeah, this is when the edgelords really started to take over. And this is also when it starts to get, like you mentioned, events. It starts to get super, super gimmicky. And this is when you have, like, issue one of X-Force has all these shiny hollow foil variant covers. And, like, this is when they started realizing that you could sucker people into buying things that are considered collectible, even when they're not. Like, there are so many people that are like, oh, I have the Spawn number one. You know, that must be worth so much. And I'm like, I have seen that in, like, every dollar bin ever because they printed 10 million of them. You know, like, so they started tricking people into buying things. Like, same thing with, like, Beanie Babies. This is the early 90s now.
Yeah. That's exactly what that is.
So we're into the early 90s. It's all the speculative market, tricking people into buying literally millions of copies of a comic book.
Yeah.
And
it almost crashed the entire industry.
Yeah, Marvel
went
bankrupt.
To say about capitalism in general in the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that enters into the Dark Ages, where Marvel goes bankrupt.
Yeah. I blame the Clone Saga, but I know you're going to disagree.
Well, I mean, the Clone Saga is a perfect example. It's this ambitious story that Marvel's like, let's make it 10,000 issues.
Yeah.
You know, it's very related. That's why they call these the Dark Ages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where to go from there.
So the Dark Ages, I'll end at DC. To me, they end in 1997 when Grant Morrison starts JLA, and in Marvel when Joe Quesada takes over the Marvel Knights line in You know, and that's when you get Kevin Smith's Daredevil, JMS's Spider-Man, Grant Morrison's X-Men, like all these, like that's in 2001. And this is when you start to see more writers taking control of the universe, less than editorial. Yeah. And they're also competing with now like Image, like Walking Dead launches in 2001. Mm-hmm. And you're now seeing, I think it's 2001. I could be wrong about that. But like you're seeing now Image is no longer just where these like big, edgy, muscular, like blood warriors go. It's now you start to see a lot more diversity in both the creators and the books. So DC and Marvel have to really step up. And this is when you, I think, to me, you get like the most, the best mix of accessible and still like iconic books where you're getting, you know, these stories that are, they're paying respect to the old stuff, but still in a way that's very fresh and new. And this is usually where most fans start to really dive into it in like the early 2000s era of Marvel and DC.
That's, I mean, now that they have competition, they have like good stuff.
Yeah. Finally. So capitalism saved the day.
Well, I was going to bring that back around and bring us all back down. But like Image had, I mean, you have The Walking Dead, but my favorite was The Max. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then like Dark Horse came around with like Hellboy and stuff, and they started making a big name for themselves.
Dark Horse but also had Star Wars, which was a huge like, you can take existing properties and have them live on in comics, because this was before, you know, there was the prequels or anything. And, like, we see a lot of that now. Like, Boom has Adventure Time and Regular Show and Steven Universe. Mm. And, like, there's Rick and Morty comics. And, like, there's, that's a good way to bring people in, too. The modern age has lots and lots of, I want more of this. Where is it? You could get later seasons of Buffy, later seasons of Smallville, Firefly.
I'm afraid I'm going to become both of you guys if I started buying Adventure Time comics. That's one thing I would buy all of them.
Well, I was going to bring it back around and say that now, like, Marvel is partnering with IDW and I think Dark Horse to, like, license out their properties and be like, okay,
the intellectual
you make us a Spider-Man for kids.
They're doing a lot of all-age stuff. That's also why you see Batman and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles teaming up a lot. IDW-DC crossover.
There are so many Ninja Turtle crossovers that I want to read right now. Everyone's talking about the Batman one because they just made, a DVD movie on it. But the one I really want to read is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Meet the Ghostbusters, because that's like two very perfect properties that I love.
That's awesome.
Also, like, the Ghostbusters comics are fantastic too. Like, this is when if you like anything, there are comic books for it. So, like,
and they're probably good.
Powerpuff Girls.
Like, you could get, I'm sure
I have a copy of a Powerpuff Girls comic. And but a Dexter's Lab comic, both from DC, because it's Warner Brothers.
That's great. But, like, we see, like, basically, like, this is also when you start, when comics stop being such a, like, straight, white, cis boys club. So you're getting a lot more women writers, a lot more LGBTQIA writers, you know, a lot more, you know, like, people of color involved. And this is why, you know, it's no coincidence that this also led to a big push in digital comic books, because most girls and not cis white het, you know, boys are they're usually not as comfortable in a comic shop with a bunch of old white guys complaining about PC culture.
So we're coming back into this because Ryan had to chase something down on eBay that was related, but we don't remember where we are. So if you want to hear what happened, go listen to the bonus episode up next month on our Patreon.
And is this our last Flyer Drive episode?
No, I think so.
I just want to say it is the most relevant thing to this episode you could possibly have won on eBay. I will not tell you if I won, though. That you'll have to cough up that $5 a month.
That's premium content. But back to the show, I think we were talking about the diverse writing cast and kind of where we're at with comics today.
Yeah, so this is, you're seeing, like, diversity that, you know, more bookstores are picking up these books, that, you know, you could go to Barnes & Noble, you don't have to go to, like, you know, some comic shop. And there's a lot of great comic shops. Like, I can attest that, like, there are, even where I live on Long Island, there's a lot of, like, absolutely fantastic comic shops that a lot of my friends that are new, are newer fans, and, like, not the, you know, not, don't look like me, are, you know, very comfortable in. But there's also some that are, like, super not. So, like, you see a lot more people using their libraries, Barnes & Noble, you know, Amazon, and they buy digitally, so you don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah. My favorite thing right now is, this sounds like a total sponsor, but it's capitalism, is Marvel Unlimited. It's just like Netflix, but for comics, and you can read pretty much any Marvel comic up until January of this year, and it's great. That's how it also helps to have a great friend like Ryan, who gives you a list of 400 Spider-Man comics to read.
Yeah.
To know what to read, but it's like perfect. You can start wherever you want.
Yeah, that wasn't regular kiss. That was a chef's kiss.
Yeah.
And like, because in the, you know, in the 60s and 70s, like, books would get canceled for selling more than what the maximum sale is now. But there wasn't as much content to compete with.
Yeah.
You know, now, like, in the age of Netflix and, like, lots and lots of streaming, how do you get kids to read comics? Especially when, oh, I love these characters. There are dozens and dozens of movies with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what brings them to the comics? And things like the DC Universe app or the Marvel Unlimited app, like, make it very easy.
Yeah.
And the companies are very slow to jump on those things. Like, they're still kind of slow on it, but they're getting there.
How long did it take for them to have a black-led superhero with Black Panther and even in the movies industry?
Right, you mean like...
Yeah, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very slow.
Well, and even then, like, even like these...
the highest grossing film.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even these characters were still written by mostly, like, old white guys for, like, a pretty long time.
Yeah. The thing, like, talking about modern day, like, all the movies and stuff and all the criticism, the thing that I hate is when people are like, you need a female-led movie, like Captain Marvel or something, and then it comes out and people are like, oh, you're just doing that because you need a woman hero, you need diversity. I'm like, you can't.
Shut up.
You can't complain and moan about it, not the word I was going to choose, and then be mad when they actually do
that. Well, I don't think those are the same people. Yeah.
But...
the thing is, I think we have a real reckoning with pop culture that, and this could be a whole episode, so I'm not going to get too far into it, but like, we're having a whole reckoning now where a bunch of guys like us, you know, like white guys we've had media cater just to our demographic forever. That like, all of a sudden, like, okay, Captain Marvel comes out. And like, I liked Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
I like, it wasn't my favorite Marvel movie, but I saw it and I was like, I'm so glad this exists. And like, it's not targeted at me, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, I get 40 other movies every year that are just like, like, I'll go watch John Wick again. That's fine.
Yeah. that's my new mantra that I keep coming back to is they don't owe you anything.
Yeah.
Like, this is, like, this is way off topic, but this is...
No, it's not. It's white privilege.
Well, it's what came to my mind most recently, which is what's going on with Pokemon, because they're cutting a bunch of the Pokemon out of the newest game, and everyone's upset about it. And I'm like, they don't owe you anything. They can do whatever they want. You can bitch, you can complain and moan about it, but they don't owe you all of the Pokemon.
They don't owe you another
100 years of Peter Parker.
Yeah. As an aside, the Pokemon thing, I think it's more because they introduced the cloud system and people were like, now's the time I'm going to get a complete Pokedex. But
that's
whatever.
That's a whole episode.
They should go, Pokemon go to GameStop and talk with their dollars. You know?
Don't Pokemon go to the polls and vote for better legislation?
Yes.
Against but that's, the original 150.
I don't know where I was going with that.
That's one of those things is like, you can just not go see Captain Marvel if it offends you so much. You don't have to like start petitions and everything. Like, you just not go. Like, there are plenty of movies that come out that I just don't go.
Yeah. There's a Flophouse, in the Flophouse group, someone always posts, there's a dude that edits women out of the superhero movies, and they're just boring and make no sense and have
what
no
What a cool
line.
Guy.
It
just, for me personally, like, when you look at the history of comics, the reason why that offends me so much to my core is because they've always pushed the social envelope.
Yeah.
Always. Like, we talked about how, like, you know, in the Golden Age, they literally had to go in front of Congress because they were too radical. Like, you have, like, people's first exposure to, like, actual characters that they love and respect being addicted to drugs and not just villains of the month. Like, you have real human stories that have always pushed the envelope, and now all of a sudden it's like, oh, the envelope's pushed enough? Don't need to push it any further. And, like, that's nonsense.
Yeah.
That's not
I think
how we
a lot of the edgelords that think that they're entitled to be offended by this stuff don't realize that they're just being conservative as the people that created the CCA in the first place. All
yeah, exactly. And like, I understand the knee-jerk reaction when you're like a young guy in high school and girls don't like you and girls don't talk to you and you're awkward and like you find solace in this nerdy place that's like, this is my safe place. I understand the immediate like, well, oh, now it's cool. So like now that, you know, like now all of a sudden you like it, but like you should be like, hey, this cool safe place is a safe place for you now too. awesome. Yeah. Now we have something to talk about.
I think that comes in twofold. The first is you should be excited that the thing you love is getting popular, because that means you're going to get more of it and it's going to get better.
Capitalism rules.
Yeah, right. In some
oh no,
so far back and forth.
There's our intro. Just him saying that.
The other thing I was going to say on it though is that a lot of these things, if you're in a vacuum enjoying these things, it becomes very personalized and you feel like it is sort of your own thing that you've digested and you've put a lot of yourself into and you've gotten a lot of yourself out of it. Mm-hmm. To when someone doesn't put all your Pokemon in the game, it feels like a personal attack.
Yeah.
But it's not. Yeah. They don't owe you anything.
Yeah. And no one's taken away your old comic books. No one's taken away your old movies. No one's taken away your old games.
Yeah. So just quit complaining.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shut up.
Yeah. Just shut up.
Just shut up.
Is that our recap?
That's our recap.
Did we come to a close here?
And let's also note that we have a historic time where, what was it? Did Infinity War pass Avatar as most the highest?
Yeah, just happened. I'm so happy because my brother didn't like it, and I think it has to do with some politics. But he loves Avatar, and I was like, this needs to top Avatar because Avatar sucks.
I don't know how Disney will ever recover from having their top
because they also own Avatar.
Maybe they'll be able to. Maybe they'll both be toppled by Star Wars.
Oh no.
But do you guys want to take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about like our Patreon and stuff?
What if I said no, dude?
Then our episode's done.
That's applied to Ryan, but yeah, I guess I will too then.
Okay. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. John, shut up. Ryan?
Yes.
What is your podcast and where can people find it?
So, Divisive Issues, like I said, two fans, two non-fans talking about comics and stuff. We don't usually do as much history. We usually have like lore dump for the first like 5 to 10 minutes at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then it's smooth sailing after that. But if you find that kind of thing interesting of like why these books matter and like what envelopes they pushed and stuff like that, we do a lot of it. We also do books that are completely stupid and like it's just dumb. You know, we're coming up on Edgelord August, which is exactly what it sounds like. So, yeah, you can find Divisive Issues at flyingmachine.network like all the other shows, or all of our backlog is also on franzradio.com. That's also where you see like most of our other projects, our old defunct political show from the network, Oops I Talk Politics.
Yeah,
you know, that's, there's links to lots of stuff on
there. What's that?
No, I just did the sign of the cross for
RIP. I thought you told me to pause. Yeah, RIP, Oops I Talk Politics.
Yeah, R-I-O-O-P-S.
Yeah.
Says what? Oops.
Rest in pieces. Sucker.
It's like oops has a pee in it. I don't know. It's not a good joke.
Rest in oops, you dummy.
It took me a long time.
If you like people getting mad at the jokes I make, then boy is Divisive Issues for you.
That's so true. I would say like this is a, if I may say so myself, this is like a perfect precursor to that podcast because I think Divisive Issues is great for, I think I said this before, readers of comics and non-readers, because there are two hardcore fans and two whatever the opposite of that is on there. Yeah. But I think I don't want people to be intimidated by that because you guys do still talk about comics. So now you have a whole history of comics. Go listen to a comic.
Yeah. If it was ever true that someone says you don't need to be a fan of the content that we're talking about to be a fan of the show, it's for this show.
Yeah.
And one thing I do want to point out just to your listeners, it is not a clean show.
Oh, that's a really good point.
By any means.
By any stretch of the imagination. So one question that I do want to ask is, if you wanted to send new listeners over there, where is a good place for them to start to get a feel for your show?
So some of the episodes I would definitely recommend, if you like the more like superhero-y stuff, and the political stuff we've done, actually our very, very early shows on the network were like social issues in comics. Mm-hmm. So we talked about like how comics slowly evolved dealing with like sexism and racism, where like you start in the early 60s where Batgirl defeats a bunch of criminals by cutting her like stockings and they go, look at those gams, and allow Batman to capture her, up to like, you know, how they actually deal with like racial issues like in a much more nuanced way. And, you know, also, if you like the intersection of politics and comic book history, we also, one of the episodes I really like is the Flintstones reboot, which is like a Marxist anti-capitalist, like, right, yeah, social, ooh, satire.
It's, I have it on trade paperback if you want to read it, John.
I'd love to read that.
Yeah,
it is
really good.
It is excellent. Or if you like the more, like, bombastic superhero stuff, we did a whole long saga on, like, the, like, dozen different Captain Marvels and how a lot of, mm-hmm, it has to do with, you know, just keeping, they kept publishing the book just so they wouldn't lose the copyright.
Yeah, I
and
love,
like, all, yeah,
I love
stuff
that
like
series
that
of episodes because it is a sort of a history lesson. I learned a lot from that I was able to regurgitate to my wife and my dad, who are both curious about Shazam and all of that stuff.
Yeah, which,
well,
yeah,
actually,
I still haven't seen, and I, like, one of my biggest drivers for it, I thought of you today, Ryan. I saw it, like, on sales.
Shazam?
Room, right? Yeah, Shazam. Yeah.
I'm a really
one of
big
favorites.
Fan.
Yeah.
And just really what I recommend, just look at any episode past episode 16, because that's when, like, the new format started, because it used to just be three comic fans. But yeah, look at any episode, and if anything piques your interest, just go for it. And if it's, like, a part two or three, we make that pretty clear at the beginning of every episode.
Yeah.
You know, listen to last week, and, like, in the show notes and stuff like that. You know, there's... And I try to include content warnings when we talk about, like, heavy stuff.
Yeah.
That isn't just, like, curses and butts or whatever.
There are a lot of butts.
Yeah.
Especially in, like, what was it that you covered before?
You might be talking about Kaijo, which is a manga where, like, girls play volleyball with just their boobs and butts. But it's written, like a DBZ-style, like, tournament. It's... We've done a lot of really silly things.
A lot of butts.
You gotta do it really cool, like one-offs too. I remember I listened to My Lesbian Experience with Loneliness.
Oh, that's one of my
too.
Favorite books, yeah, of the last, yeah, year.
I still haven't read that, but I,
yeah,
it sold
it's,
me.
It's like, right, even something like that, like, that's more serious. It's a manga diary about a woman who was trying to come to terms with her confidence as an artist and still get over a lot of issues that her parents instilled her about intimacy. And yeah, it's like, that's not a funny episode, but, like,
I feel like
it's
that's a good serious, yeah, episode to start, yeah, with, even.
And it's, yeah, also, that's an interesting episode because Daryl's the one who brought it to us, and he's one of the non-fans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was on it, so go listen to that episode. You want to learn a lot about Scooby-Doo.
Oh, you're on the Scooby-Doo one, not the,
yeah,
Lesbian Experience.
No,
yeah,
sorry.
I was like, I remember that.
No. But you mentioned before something very important, which is that you are part of the Flying Machine Network.
Yes.
Who knew?
Yes.
This whole month, if you're just joining in, we've had guests on from almost every show on the network, because we're doing a Patreon drive. And if you go to patreon.com/flyingmachine, you can learn a lot about what we have to offer there. I'll run through these really quick because we have some special announcements regarding the drive. But, like, for one buck a month, you get a newsletter. You get some old Comrade Radio episodes. For $5 a month, you get the bonus episodes we mentioned.
Can I just
before.
Mention some of the $1 tier very, very quickly?
Yes, please.
I also,
yeah. You have a lot going
on there.
I write
a monthly music blog that will now have the 15th of every month. Sometimes I do more than one a month, but they have audio versions with all the music and everything I talk about. Mm-hmm. And for the Flying Machine Drive, I took all the old blogs and released them all in a week, and that was a dozen episodes.
Yeah.
And they're not funny. They're very serious and mostly me being a sad boy on the internet, but they're I'm really proud of them. So that's for $1. And
yeah,
then the $5, as you're saying, Nicholas.
Yeah. $5, you get the bonus episodes.
And the audio version of that.
And yeah, the audio version and exclusive shows. So we just launched one called Cortex, which is a Firefly show with Elle and Malcolm. You also get the MC University, which is Malcolm and Justin talking about the MCU.
And how Iron Man hurts his left arm all the time.
Does he?
Mm-hmm.
And I want to touch on this really fast because we've hit, like, all of our goals so far. We're at 172. Last week we weren't there and we reached it, which means, John,
yeah,
what's going to happen?
I'm going to write a song with Malcolm written by you.
Yeah.
Not you.
Not me specifically.
But you listening.
The listeners.
Yeah.
So you and Malcolm are going to do a live stream where you take listener suggestions to write songs. Or songs?
Song.
Song?
G.
Singular song. And that is tomorrow, if you're listening to this the day it came out.
On
or
the 24th?
Thursday,
yeah,
24th.
So Thursday the 25th, we're going to do that. At 7.
Yep, 7 p.m. Central.
I believe so. I'll
cool.
check the event.
Okay, double check that while I tell the people what happens if we get just $8 more a month. We're going to have another show on the bonus feed, which is Malcolm talking about the Coen Brothers films. So, it, like, for $5 a month, this is a ridiculous amount of stuff.
And you also get the whole backlog, too. It's not just new stuff. Yeah.
So you get more than a year of bonus episodes for every show on the network, unless they joined us recently, like Short Till I Reform Loud or The Losers. But, like, that is an absurd amount of content for just $5. That's ridiculous.
It's 7 p.m. Eastern.
7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific.
Thank you.
3-2-1
blast
Pacific. Pacific Ocean.
Oh, and 2 Hawaiian.
Right.
I don't know. 1 p.m. Right.
Japanese.
Japanese is between 14 and 15 hours behind. So.
Okay, you nerd. Let's keep going.
I mean, that's all I got, I think.
There's
another
tier.
Anything, guys?
Well, it's a $10
tier. Oh, the $10 tier.
Which gets our undying love.
You get our undying love.
That's the only
love.
Way to buy undying love with monetary value.
I get your name tattooed on my toe. It's not real, but maybe.
I mean, for 20, I would do
unless. but you get like... you'll get an annual gift box of Flying Machine stuff.
I have a huge box of comics that I'm dying to give away to people, so...
Oh, man, I better sign up for that $10 reward tier then, huh?
Are you eligible?
I would assume so. I get the $5 rewards.
I don't know. A lot of them are bad. You could just have some. I'll save the good ones for the patrons.
When you said dying to give away, it wasn't with excitement. It was with urgency.
Did I miss anything, guys? Keep me honest here.
I don't think so.
No, I think you got it good.
Cool. Also, before the month ends, I don't know when, we're going to do an Age of Empires stream with, I think, whoever wants to join.
Oh, and I'm going to be doing a stream sometime. It might have already happened. I don't know. I'm going to watch Alien and Aliens. And me and Malcolm and I are going to talk about
it. I didn't know that
those
won. That's awesome. Yeah. I think I voted for that.
Yeah. Alien won, but Malcolm really twisted my arm, and I guess I'll watch both of them. I've never seen any movies, if your listeners don't know. So that's
spoilers,
that'll be my first
time. One of
them
has more than one alien.
Yeah. Whoa. It's not the one you'd think.
Right.
The other thing, I forgot to mention this. This isn't related to the Patreon drive, but if you guys want to listen to one of my favorite podcasts, it's We'll Get It Right Next Year. You will learn that Ryan has never seen any movie.
Yeah,
name
that's
a movie,
my comedy
John.
Podcast.
Tom Hanks.
That's not a movie.
He's in them. Is that close enough?
Forrest Gump. He's never seen Forrest Gump.
I have seen Forrest Gump, actually.
He's lying.
I know.
But yeah, the links for that are on franzradio.com, too.
Okay,
so.
Cool. Yeah. It's a great podcast. Go listen to that, too. Do we have anything else? I don't think we do. I think that means that I'm still Nick.
I think I'm still John.
And I'm still Ryan.
And this is Stranger Still.
I give you... The Incredible Flying Machine!